I hereby call the regular meeting of the Cambria Community Services District Board of Directors to order. Would you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? We have all five directors present, so we have a quorum. And I'm going to ask our district council, Mr. Carmel, to report from the closed session.
Thank you, President Gray. At the August 15th regular meeting, the board held a closed session for a conference with its labor negotiator pursuant to Government Code Section 54957.6. The designated representative was General Manager Matthew McElhaney. Che Johnson was not present. The employee group is the International Association of Firefighters. There was no action taken. Thank you.
Thank you very much. In the item next up, I don't have a formal president's report, though I may have things to say from time to time during the meeting. So I'll go to agenda review, which is for anybody who wants to make adjustments in the agenda. It's not feedback, that wasn't it. No, there it is, yeah. A radio. Anybody wants to make adjustments in the agenda, either deleting items or moving them, it's your time to make speak up. Anyone want to make any changes in the agenda? Great, thank you. Go to board member communications. This is when members of the board can report briefly on their activities, make an announcement, brief announcement, or ask a question. Anyone wishing to speak? I think Director Farmer has his light on.
Thank you, President Gray. I think what I'm about to say isn't anything that most of us aren't already aware of. But considering the fires that are going on down in Southern California right now, we who live in Cambria, we already know how blessed we are to be here. But I think right now we should let's say be saying a prayer for the folks that are going through what they're going through down south, and also express gratitude to whatever power you wish to relate to for the fact that we are so blessed and fortunate to be living here in Cambria with the people that we know, being so close to nature. It's such a blessing to have nature around us. And just maybe give some extra thought in that regard to our good fortune. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Any other board member comments? Okay, thank you. We'll go on to the next item, which is public comment. This is public comment on items that are not on our agenda but are within the purview of the CCSD in some fashion. I have two slips. I'll take the first from Bruce Howard, who sent us also a written comment, which will be included on the website next to the agenda. So, but he's here. I'm glad he's here to speak on the topic in person. Mr. Howard. Oh. The mic, I think, is. Oh, here, you're going to.
Hello, test.
There you are. Good.
So speak into the microphone. Is that what you're telling me? Okay. Thank you again. You know who you all are. Thank you. My name is Bruce Howard. I'm a resident in Cambria, and I'm here today representing the Rotary Club of Cambria. Our Rotary Club of Cambria is hosting an End Polio Now event this year at Chalmel Park on October 19th. You all have that information. You also have the history of polio eradication. It's not pertinent to this, but I wanted you to have it. This is our second annual End Polio Now event. The inaugural event was last year on October 14th. World Polio Day this year is Thursday, October 24th. It's a worldwide event. Excuse me. Our Rotary Club of Cambria began our approval process this year in June, working with county agencies, CCSD via General Manager McElhaney and Cambria Fire Chief Berkeley. Thank you to both for your support and assistance. We've completed everything exactly the same as we did last year, including the event permit and park permission from the county, an insurance COI to the county, arranging for an ambulance and EMTs to be on site through the Cambria Hospital District, and the work with CCSD and Cambria Fire. We've just received notice that there are unfinished approvals required this year from the Friends of the Fiscalinny Ranch Preserve. I want to point out that first, this was not a requirement last year, and second, the event will be held at Chamel Park. We traverse the ranch only, starting and ending at Chamel Park, understanding that it's safer for our attendees to be on the ranch lands instead of in the streets. As you know, there have been a lot of 5Ks on streets in Cambria Del Moonstone, et cetera, but we feel like it's safer at the park. If necessary, we can time the participants in groups of less than 25 at a time, if that's what is required. Last year, we had approximately 20 to 25 participants, but of course, we're hoping for more this year. I'm here now to express our concern that since this event is a month away and we started in June, that any additional requirements not jeopardize our event. Please know that we are willing to do whatever is required of us. We live here too. We want this to be safe also. We just want to do the right thing. We just want to know ahead of time what's required of us, and we'll do whatever is required of us to make this event safe. That's it. Does anybody have questions?
Oh, thank you very much. I wish to ask a question. Dr. Thomas?
Thank you, President Gray, and thank you, Mr. Howard. I'm just thinking the FFRP board met on Tuesday. Shucks, they didn't get a chance to weigh in on this, but I can't imagine there being any problem of, as you say, people traversing the ranch in various sizes and clusters. I can't imagine any cluster in an event like this of greater than 20 or 25 participants. So I can't imagine there would be an issue. Is there some action that needs to be taken?
Excuse me, this is not an agenda item. It's just public comment, right, so limited discussion only.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. One thing can be explained, what our jurisdiction is over the ranch, which I think may be the subject of just information. General Manager McElhaney, you want to say?
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. After conferring with counsel, it's always a good idea that we require general liability insurance from any entity that's going to be using the ranch, even for a short period of time. I don't see that as being a barrier to move this project forward or this event forward. I don't know what the Friends of the Fiscalinny Ranch mentioned to you, sir, on what they require.
I have the note from Kitty if you want to see it.
Yeah, if you would share that. But ultimately, it's the CCSD's property. It's our responsibility to manage that. And I'll work with counsel and with Bruce here, excuse me.
Perfect.
And we can sort it out. But I don't think it is too much of a hurdle.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for bringing this to our attention. We have another slip from Christine Heinrichs for public comment.
Good afternoon. At this morning's meeting, the Coastal Commission heard the appeal entered by two commissioners of the Brambles permit and found substantial issue to support denying it. The staff report was clear and recommending that the commission deny the permit due to lack of adequate water. Applications for new water uses rarely come before the board, although there was some discussion in the past of bringing them to board attention. They are approved by Jim Green and Matt McElhaney. I try to follow them, but miss this one. I'm grateful to the commissioners who called it out. The county always approves new construction applications because the CSD sends a staff member to tell the board that the district has determined that it has plenty of water to serve the development. Although the county has an affirmative requirement to determine this independently, they never do, preferring to rely on the CSD's assurance. The Coastal Commission staff report calls the district and the county out for their bogus water analysis on pages 2 and 3 of the staff report, which I will attach to my written comments. And they admonish the county and the CSD to stop wasting commission time and resources. On page 3, let me read, if the applicants still want to pursue the project or some variation thereof for example, a version that matched existing water usage, then the applicants are welcome to go back through a county CDP process wherein these issues are appropriately addressed. But it is not a good use of the Commission staff's scarce resources to attempt to solve such problems through the Commission's CDP process, nor is the Commission required to condition a project to bring it into conformance with the LCP. Mr. McElhaney claims the county is responsible for issuing this permit. That's technically true. He's new, so he may not be aware that this evasion of responsibility has been overused by the district and the county. The district claims no responsibility because the county holds land use authority. The county claims no responsibility because they rely on the district's assurances of adequate water, and both escape accountability. Everyone sees what's going on: a bureaucratic shuffle to permit water-using development. Time for the board to be accountable. Apologize to the Coastal Commission for wasting their time. Assure them that you have directed staff to stop approving these permits. As Dan Carl, Central Coast District Director for the Coastal Commission, wrote in 2022, we respectfully request that you not file any more CDP applications for such proposed development unless and until the water supply situation changes in Cambria and there is an adequate sustainable water supply. To that point, we do not believe that a will serve letter from CCSD as the water purveyor satisfies that requirement, including as the LCP finding that is required on this point is not CCSD's to make. Rather, it is the county's independent responsibility. Please consider the board's and the staff's role in these continuing permit denials. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone else in attendance wish to make a public comment here? Ms. Dodson, is anyone online who wishes to make a public comment?
Yes, Lauren Younger.
Ms. Younger?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. It's important that Cambrians feel that they're heard. To relegate written comments only to the website rather than read them at the beginning of each CCSD meeting is a small but effective assault on information sharing for our community. If we take the time to tune in, we want the whole story. If we cannot tune in, it's good that you put the questions on the website. But remove written statements from the actual meeting and you've squashed speech and communication. Not everyone is comfortable speaking live at a meeting, so please quit eliminating our ability to comment in writing in real time. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else online?
Christina Galloway.
Ms. Galloway, please go ahead.
Hi. So I guess this piggybacks a little bit on Christine's public comment, but perhaps I just have a different approach. But I'm happy that we're at least on topic. First, let me preface by saying I'm not fully, you know, well-versed on how your processes work. So, you know, give me some grace here on that. But I do want to kind of reintroduce into our awareness and your consideration the topics of the EDU water use. But I would go a step further and also add in the build-out reduction program as something that would be valuable to revisit. And yeah, I just think that there should be a kind of more serious and possibly a dialogue and possible action around improving how we execute on the existing plans and also, you know, the existing plans in our existing Title VIII and how we do kind of move water meters around, retired lots, sender lots, receiver lots. I guess why this piggybacks on what Christine was saying is in the Coastal Commission's legal kind of response to Dirk Winter this morning, there's a whole paragraph about water meter transfers, and that they actually don't. Let's see, drives up water meter credits. Although active water meter transfer transaction, the CCSD cannot currently confirm the exact number of vacant receiver parcels on its active water meter list. So it sounds like there's just a whole dialogue happening, but nobody's really connecting. So what I would like to request is that everybody kind of, whether it's in the form of a Zoom or in person, that there's a meeting where people, you know, the county, CSD, Coastal Commission, Land Use, NCAC can kind of come together and say, like, what are we doing? Everybody says we don't have time, we don't have money for this, but everybody's wasting each other's time and money, you know? So I think it would just be a benefit for us all to kind of stop and get together and share data. It seems like the Coastal Commission's working off of different data than the CSD is working off of. And then the NCAC is just kind of like the middleman. So yeah, that's where I'm at on that. Yeah, so thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. Anyone else online?
No.
Okay, thank you. Having finished public comment, I think we'll move on to regular business. And the first item is discussion and consideration of our strategic plan update. I'll turn this over to General Manager McElhenney for introduction. And then we'll have board questions and then public comment.
Thank you, President Gray. Agenda item 4A, discussion and consideration of strategic plan update. There's no fiscal impact associated with this item. The board had a special meeting on February 26th, 2024, and adjourned to March 4th, 2024 to update our strategic plan. This is more of a minor update. Then adopted the updated plan on March 14th, reviewed our underlying objectives, objectives to be primarily completed over the next 6 months, and create a vision statement, mission statement. And we are here now with our objective status report.
Okay. Thank you. As in the past, when we have gone through these reports, I want to do it one core area, basically one core area at a time. So if anybody, and then open it, of course, to questions from the directors. I'll start then with the water services, the general water services core area, which is, of course, strategic goals meet the ongoing challenges of effectively and reliably managing water resources in our sensitive ecosystem. Do any of you have questions? Director Thomas, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. And prior to that, you know, just on the staff report, you know, in the second sentence, I just want to, you know, can ask a question, raise awareness. The sentence that reads, this effort included a review of the underlying objectives to be primarily accomplished over the next 6 months. And this infers a level of a short-term thinking and mindset on the board that I don't believe is appropriate. And I would hope in future staff reports on these strategic reviews, you know, we would recognize that we are looking at the actions to accomplish all of these strategic objectives, some of which are long-term.
Thank you, Director Thomas. I think that was more of a statement saying that's how much time left we have on the current strategic plan, because we're going to be revisiting that in 2025, but we can clear that up next time.
Yeah. Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Gray. I just want some clarification on the item number. I need to take my glasses off so I can see better, which is kind of weird. So under complete the Stewart Street tank construction, in red it says, due to the scope of the project and the reorientation of the tanks, staff will have to submit a CDP, and we will have to resubmit a full CATEX package. So if we could just have some clarification on what CATEX means.
Sure. Thank you, Director Farmer. And I have Mr. Green on the line as well. Yeah. So the overall project, the Stewart Street tank project, which has taken us a while, and once we brought in some of our engineers and design consulting firms, and we determined that the current foundation of those tanks does no longer meet building codes and seismic standard codes for the thickness of that foundation. It triggered a whole slew of things that needed to change in the overall project description. We are now moving that tank a little further south into some CCSD-owned property that's adjacent to the Stewart Street tank location. That significant change in the overall project has now triggered a coastal development permit because it is not lying within the same footprint as the previous project. With that comes a new coastal development permit, and then the KTEX, and Mr. Green confirm if I'm wrong, but this is a categorical exemption that we'll be applying for that is basically stating there's no significant environmental impacts that's associated with this project. Mr. Green, do I have that correct?
Yeah, portion. The KTEX is exactly that, a categorical exemption. This was filed initially in 91 when those tanks were built. There are several other metrics, though, that triggered the CDP. It was setbacks, it was the foundation, and it was that retaining wall that we are going to have to move onto our other adjacent property for the installation of these tanks. So we're reorientating the tanks to where the large tank will be on the right, where tank one is now, and then the smaller tank will be on the left, so that way we have adequate setback of 10 feet from property line to property line for the adjacent properties in that residential neighborhood.
Thank you.
Well, if I could just follow up, I think I appreciate the more thorough explanation than I was anticipating. I guess I just wanted to know what CATEX stood for. So now I know it's categorical exemption. So thank you.
I can't see the lights very well. No. Okay. I just had one question actually on that same topic. And this is something not really. It's a little bit off the exact topic of the strategic plan update, but there are a lot of numbers floating around about the cost of the project and how it is. Obviously, it's more costly than we originally thought it would be. But I wanted to get a sense of what you and General Manager McElhaney and Utilities Manager Jim Green kind of could ballpark what we're going to be spending, because it's extra work, of course, involved, not just extra permitting.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the project has evolved and become more expensive, significantly more expensive over the past 3 to 4 years. There was some different philosophies in previous leadership on how we were going to replace these tanks, bolted versus welded. And then, as we know, the economy has shifted quite a bit over the last 4 years in terms of cost of goods and services and inflation. I've talked to Mr. Green, and with the added movement of the tanks, the new pouring of the foundation, the CDP process, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Green, but we're probably looking at a $1.5 million project, give or take.
Actually, probably closer to two.
Two.
Yes.
There we go.
So, fortunately for us, we have all the engineering paid for, even the re-engineering of it. As far as the engineering deadlines for 90% submittal, even with the new KTEX package, the CDP package that we've had to deliver and that's been submitted to county, we are still are on timeline to receive those 90% drawings this month, which we have. Mm-hmm. And the actual cost of that is going to be the construction. It's going to be digging those foundations that are now going to be 30 inches deep. And moving that retaining wall over 20 feet and rebuilding that. So those are some of the exceeding costs that'll get us closer to that $2 million mark. Just by benchmark, when we received this allocation or were awarded funds, we didn't physically receive the funds 2 years ago, this was just south of $1 million project. So you can see how the cost of living and the cost of projects have grown over the past 2 years.
And just to clarify, make sure I understand this, when you say it's a $2 million project, that would include what we've already spent on it, right, as well as the grant money.
So that is $2 million just for construction alone.
Oh, for construction alone.
That does not account for the engineering fees that went into that.
Mm-hmm.
And that does not, we're not subtracting the $375,000 that we should see by quarter one, 2025.
In other words, the $375,000 will go to defray the $2 million.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. So net cost is somewhat less. Thank you. Thank you for the explanation. I had another question on the last item on this sheet. The update our groundwater model in the San Simeon and Van Gordon groundwater basin. And I don't see, I'm not sure, maybe the comments, there are no comments there, and I'm not sure exactly what that project is and how it relates to the other ones we've been doing, like the Task 2, Task 1, and those studies.
Yeah, I'll let Mr. Green speak to that one. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. So the last time we did an update to the under the groundwater modeling there was in 2007, Todd Groundwater did it. So this has been something we want to re-update for years. But with the recent in-stream flow study that Stillwater prepared for us, it covered the majority of those concerns or updated those figures with more recent precipitation and stream flow figures. So the majority of that has already been covered. So what I'd like to propose for this is putting this towards the end of the calendar year. What we really need to do is some modeling during operation or during WRF operation.
So you would propose, the proposal is to extend the target completion date to later in 2025?
I'd say on the calendar year, fourth quarter 2025.
Fourth quarter, okay.
Ultimately, we'd like to do some of this not just modeling, we'd like to do analysis and use our piezometers while the actual plant is in operation so we can see what kind of effects it has.
Okay.
If any.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions about the water page, the water chart? Okay. Move on to Water Services, Water Reclamation Facilities, specific to the WRF, Advanced Coastal Development Permit to achieve County and Coastal Commission approval. Again, any questions from the directors? I do have a, oh, sorry, Director Dean.
I think the pilot testing program fourth quarter. Oh, sorry. I think the pilot testing program needs to be moved to the fourth quarter.
And that's the one, which line is that? That's the,
zero liquid discharge. Right, right. It's under the brine waste disposal. Second.
Take note.
Well, it does say first quarter 2025.
Yeah.
Right, I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, yeah. Third quarter. Well, one does and one doesn't. The board approval. Oh, I see what you're saying, yes. So it should be stat. In other words, remain as it is.
Yeah.
I think that's a good target date. First quarter 2025, we're close to getting the pilot approved, and Mr. Clark Easter is working with the Division of Drinking Water to answer some of the permeate questions. So I anticipate the zero liquid discharge pilot program coming before the board October-ish, which would allow us to run that short-term pilot. And if successful, we would be on track for first quarter 25 for its implementation.
So what I was questioning was that second line where it says it's going to go to finance and R&I and board approval. That's the one I was saying I thought should be fourth quarter. Because October is the fourth quarter, right?
Yeah. Now that
We reviewed it, but we don't have all of the final information yet.
Yeah.
At R&I.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So board approval, right now, it's I think it's going to be on the October, it's tentatively set for an October agenda, right?
Zero liquid discharge?
Yeah.
Correct.
So it should be fourth quarter.
Fourth quarter. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. And I had any further questions, Dr. Dean? Okay. Yeah, I had another question on the, I think this is, on the bottom of that page, under the complete the CDP application. It's duly noted that we completed the project description. The next line is submit the data needed to complete the application for the county, CDP application for the county. It says third quarter 2024, but there is some additional information that we're submitting to them, which is another item on this agenda applies to. So maybe, Mr. McElhaney, what would you say, or Mr. Green, to a more realistic target completion date, fourth quarter or first quarter 2025?
I'm still very optimistic for fourth quarter 2024, giving the agenda item today that is going to amend our consultant service agreement with SWCA SWCA. They've quoted us a 45-day turnaround on a lot of these items, which are significant components to addressing the information hold at the county level. So as we all know, back in 2020, there was an information hold that had several different questions about our coastal development permit. A lot of them have to do with land use, coastal use policies. And as such, we're coming today with a policy consistency analysis scope change to their agreement. So it's my belief, and again, Mr. Green, correct me if I'm wrong, but we have some pretty good faith in the fact that SWCA will be able to get a lot of that information to us, and then we'll be able to submit a completed application. We did submit a completed project description, and the in-stream flow study,
right,
which are key components to it. But as I noted in my general manager letter, and despite some of the public comments, we did outwardly and openly say that we still have a lot more work to go. We expected an information hold and that there's still more work to be done. So we're being as transparent as we can. This is not a completed application, but we are telling the public, we posted it, that yes, there's going to be information hold. This is why we're bringing our amendment with SWCA forward today. And my hopes are high that we should be able to get some of those answers on the information hold and what's missing from that completed CDP by the end of this quarter.
Thank you.
This fiscal year.
That yes, thank you.
Mr. Green, your faith in fourth quarter?
Absolutely. As of right now, the only thing County Planning's requested back from us is some updated signatures and dates on an application. They know we are fully intending to bolster and make our AMP more robust. So as of right now, the only information hold we have is just for an application and some signatures that are updated on that. That's been submitted.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Vice President Scott.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. So my understanding is that you're working very closely with the county on this application, and was there any, were they very much ready for you to give them the application as it was, even though it didn't have all the information there?
Thank you, Vice President Scott. Absolutely. That was actually the discussion that we've had. So as we've opened the dialogue with the Coastal Commission and the county on this project description and working with them and getting their insight into our project description. So a lot of the final project description that came before this board actually had several meetings with the county and the Coastal Commission and tried to get as much input on their perception of how complete that was. So what was brought to you as far as the coastal the project description was based on feedback from our communications with the county. We had actually asked to have more meetings with the county before its submittal, and their position was basically they are willing to do it, but why don't we just submit it with what we have, knowing that we have more documentation coming and we'll work through the process.
Oh, Dr. Farmer.
Thank you, President Gray. I just want to go back to the brine waste disposal project. And I believe General Manager just said he anticipated like this test of it taking place in October. And I believe you said afterward that then the project would be implemented. In other words, the zero liquid discharge would be implemented in January of 25. I think it was something like that you said.
To clarify, Director Farmer, the overall piece to that strategic plan is resolve the brine waste disposal issue. So our target completion date for that would be first quarter of 2025. If zero liquid discharge proves to be a viable alternative.
Okay.
And if that's the case, after the pilot study in October, which this board still has to approve, if that was to be approved and successful, we bring it back to the board with all the financial implications, you know, that may be a result of operating that type of project with your approval. And then we could strongly say, fingers crossed, if this project was to work and it does what it has the potential to do, that would be answering one of our strategic goals, which would be resolving the brine waste disposal issue.
Okay, I think for anyone that was listening and if they heard you say, well, it'll be implemented in January 25, they might not have realized the entire process that it's going to take to get to that point, including the board voting on it. So that's the reason I brought that up.
Absolutely, and I didn't mean to create any confusion. 100% board approval, not only on the pilot, but if the pilot works, I still have to come back to this esteemed board and ask permission to to make this thing work. So
the esteemed board. Well, it could be the confusion was only with me, but I just needed to bring it up anyway. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. No further questions on this page. Let's move on to the wastewater services, which is to execute phased repairs and upgrades for the wastewater treatment system. Any questions on any of these items or comments? Director Scott, Vice President Scott.
Yes, thank you. So the last entry under define the extent of repairs needed to reduce the inflow and infiltration, it looks like the original target date and the updated target date are the same. So that really wasn't a change, right?
No, but Mr. Green might have some updates on where we are with that.
Okay.
Mr. Green.
So great. Basically what we have to do is one of our chief INI locations is Moonstone Beach Drive. We know that the sewer pressure main and the hydraulic main for the wastewater system is in that brackish water or in that king tide zone where it takes on water there. In the first quarter of next year, we want to camera and evaluate actually if there is INI and how much. And the second step would be to evaluate the replacement or the repair of that line and other locations on Marine Terrace where we have similar INI due to groundwater levels.
Thank you. So
is it changed?
Yeah, getting back to the date, is second quarter 2025 still the going, you know, basically the current
absolutely
date?
Yeah. During the first quarter, during the wet season, is when we'd want to perform that evaluation underground. And then a couple months, you know, after internal evaluation and assessment, and then we could go ahead and announce like some sort of strategic plan to replace.
Okay, great. So it wouldn't seem any changes needed, actually. Just that it's the update's the same as the original, but the update's still valid. So right. Any other questions? Okay, I'll move on to the fire protection and emergency services. Provide optimal fire protection, water rescue, and emergency medical services on a 24/7 basis. Again, questions, comments, suggestions from the board members? Yeah, Mr. Dr. Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. And a couple questions. And under the strategic objective of update the board on all changes to evacuation planning, the comments don't really give me a full understanding of, you know, to me they're insufficient to explain how we're going to get there. And then likewise, the near the bottom of the page, the, you know, prepare and provide a risk reduction and hazard mitigation plan. There's the date of third quarter. Third quarter is about over, and so you know, let's talk. My two questions.
Okay. Do you wish to, General Manager McElhinney?
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, President Gray, Director Thomas. Going to the risk reduction hazard mitigation plan, we've been working closely with OES on that update. I just received an email, and I know that the chief's here to speak with on it as well. We're very close to wrapping that up and finishing it. So I think third quarter is a solid target for that plan, but I'll let chief speak to it. I've been on some of those emails. The chief can also speak to some of our evacuation planning and strategic planning as far as that goes as well.
Chief Berkey.
Good afternoon. Thank you. So in regards to that, yeah, the hazard mitigation plan is a kind of a long process that we're starting with the county. So the county, they've had a hazard mitigation plan for a long time that we have not been a part of. And so what they do is they create it for the whole county and then they get annexes to it. And this year is the first year that we're going to actually have an annex, an addition to it. And so that's going to be an ongoing process. It's probably not going to be done. I mean, this is most likely going to be next year for the most part for getting that completed. As far as the risk reduction, the last update that I gave, that's another ongoing process as well. So we have a lot of moving parts with that. As you can see in the notes there, I met with a lot of different entities on August 28th, including County OES, but I also met with CHP, Sheriff, State Parks, the Fire Safe Focus Council, as many stakeholders as I could. And that was an attempt to kind of get an update on moving forward with our evacuation planning, also with our the fire department's pre-attack plans. And that has to do with that with the county as well. So that this isn't just within Cambria. We're starting in Cambria and I'm kind of taking the lead on it for the county as well. So with what they've asked me to do is kind of create an outline and then hopefully we can move forward with that and give maybe that would be a catalyst to the rest of the county adopting what we're doing here. So it's a long process and I've got a lot of meetings coming up to kind of to follow up on that. But yeah, so the dates are going to be there. It's my best attempt to get, but again, there's a lot of moving parts to it. So we're kind of at this point, it's basically just guessing, you know, when we can be done. Because there's a lot of, like I said, different layers that we're relying on, you know, information wise before we can move forward with it.
Very much appreciate the deeper context.
Yeah. Chief, just to circle back around. So the county has its own hazard mitigation risk reduction plan, which we've never been a part of.
Correct.
And so what we're trying to do is not only tie in our evacuation planning, but also this hazard mitigation plan and bring ourselves back into the fold with the county and coordinate with them.
Yeah. So they're linked together in there, but they're really separate. So the hazard mitigation plan again is something it's been brought up in the past and we've had that in the past, our own. It just was a timing thing. So I can't remember exactly the years, but it was 1 year off from when the county did theirs to where we had a grant with ours. And it was the multi-jurisdictional hazard mitigation plan we had with the Cambria Community Services District, or sorry, the healthcare district. And so since that's been expired, that's where we knew this was coming. It was kind of a planned thing because I had discussed with the county request to get on board with theirs. Yep. And so that's where this kind of overlap kind of happened. It's just like, again, it's just timing. So one has expired. And in the meantime, and I've been in contact with FEMA about it to make sure that everything's, you know, in line with them. But I've been working closely again with the county and we're moving forward with it. But it is really two separate things.
Sorry. Yeah.
Just let's link there.
Just briefly, I just follow up on that before I get to Vice President Scott. Our intent is to integrate, be part of the overall hazard mitigation plan, though, not Correct. To have two separate ones. Basically, at some point, we're integrated.
Correct.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And that's what's going on now. Okay, good.
And we have in the past done our own.
I know.
Which hasn't necessarily, you know, when we started getting into conversations with County OES and what the county was doing, our plan that we had consultants construct doesn't exactly align with what the county's doing and what OES standards are. And so we found out that our current document really isn't up to snuff. And so the chief did a good job by connecting with the county, bringing us into the fold with their plan. And then we're all talking the same language, if that makes sense.
Thank you. Yes, it does.
Yeah. And that's as I gave in the last update, that's what I'm trying to do on all aspects. You know, we want to make sure that we're all moving in unity and we're kind of coming together with the county, and we don't want to be way over here when they're, you know, we want to make sure that everybody's working together. So, yeah. And that's just another aspect of that.
Thank you. Vice President Scott.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. So I really appreciate the work that you're doing with the other entities. I think that's really important, but the objective is for board consideration, so I don't think it's going to happen in the third quarter. So I think we need to change that.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Because today would be the day that we would have to consider it.
Right? So we were, Vice President Scott, yeah. You were talking 2025?
Correct. Yeah.
Second quarter?
Again, it's a guess. So it's whatever, because again, this is all based on grants that they've received and how quickly that can come in. And again, we're not just the only entity involved. And when we get involved with the county, it's the entire county. So the other CSDs have to be involved. All of the municipalities have to be involved. And so that does take time. Best guess, yeah, it might be second quarter 2025.
Okay. And we'll note that. And okay. And just for, we do have a hazard mitigation plan in place. It's a little out of date.
Yes.
But it is in place. We're just in the process of updating it. Right. And if we're going to work with the county and do it the right way, it may take us into 2025. So.
Yeah, I had a quick question on, and I don't know if I missed something, but that meeting on this reference here, three items on August 28th with you and the county OES. What came out of that in terms of moving any of these forward? And I was particularly interested in the safe refuge locations. Is anything new on that?
That's exactly what that meeting was about. So it was all inclusive, everything that with the evacuation planning, bringing in probably the largest thing that came out of that was bringing law enforcement into those decisions, and then also getting them involved in the evacuation plan itself, having you know, again, when this entire event happens, the law enforcement is going to be in charge of most of that. So there's nothing really on those evacuation plans that kind of gives them any sort of direction. And I'm also referring to our pre-attack plans. The pre-attack plans are more or less for the first responders. And so when having we need to start with the evacuation plan, update those safe, we're calling them temporary refuge areas now, and updating those kind of locations, because there's been some changes, not significant changes, but there has been changes. So what came out of that was just basically a direction. So again, it's multiple, just even finding those documents to be able to update them and change them. So I've been working with Ryan Trapp from County OES, also Battalion Chief Vinya from CAL FIRE, and then also the Fire Safe Focus Group since then to set up another meeting to try and move these things forward. So it's a slow-moving process, and I know a lot of it's just, you know, kind of waiting and seeing, but we have to start with just getting the information, moving forward, bring all the entities together again, and discussing the changes. So okay. There is also a large update coming to the Genesis Protect program, mm-hmm. And so that's going to be, again, a county, it's going to be moving in the direction of the county. We, in our area, we're going to be updating our zones. So that's the first thing that I need to do is work with them as quickly as possible and update our zones within our area. Yeah. And so that's the next step that's actually happening next week, next Monday. Yeah. So meeting with the entities I just described to try and update those zones and get that information over to county. And again, that's all layers too. So we want to make sure that we're putting those layers on that evacuation map so everybody can have that. Okay. Also with the first responders. So
thank you. So it just strikes me as all these dates pretty much valid because the targets are not, they're not hard targets. They're reports and updates and so forth. So I think we're on track to
correct,
what we've sketched out here. It sounds tight.
Yeah, and again, there's so many moving parts that they're really just guesses at this point. We're trying to move as quickly as we can, but the other entities, especially if you add fire season in there with all of those entities being affected by that, it takes time.
Yeah. Dr. Farmer.
Thank you, President Gray. I just want to touch base on one item here, and hopefully you can answer this with relative ease. Report on development of procedures for evacuation of residents needing extra help. So over here in the comments under red, the evacuation assistance program, was sent out in utility billing mailers, a general manager's reports, letter from the GM, the message from the fire chief. So Chief Berkey, have you had any feedback from the community on this particular item?
A little bit, yeah. Mostly just questions and trying to figure out what that program actually means and how it's going to be implemented. We have not received any we get a, every year we get a letter saying how many people have signed up. We haven't had any more signed up, but as of right now, the current notification that I got didn't change from last year. Mm-hmm. But again, this just happened a couple of months ago, so it's in process of being updated. But most of the questions that come or that are fielded by me are regards to what that actually means when they fill in the paper. What's it going to look like during the evacuations? And mm-hmm. and just to clarify, just since we're on that topic, that initially was for Diablo Canyon. So when the evacuation planning went in place for the county, it was meant to have within the evacuation planning area of the county, which is all Diablo, it does not include Cambria. Those were meant for people needing assistance, additional assistance, if they're disabled or for any reason they need assistance, that it would just notify the first responders that that's happening. Does not guarantee that the first responders are going to be able to actually assist them. It just is an awareness thing to let us know that they're going to be there and that we have a high priority area, potentially. So what the county is in the process of doing now is kind of expanding that program, and that's where we got a hold of it, and we're trying to kind of lead that again to get that information out kind of ahead of time. But they're really working on trying to get the entire county on board with that evacuation assistance. Mm-hmm. So we up here in Cambria, Paso Robles, all the way down to Arroyo Grande, all outside the initial evacuation planning for the Diablo Canyon, also have the same resources. So that's where this came in. Again, it's another slow-moving process, but it's something that the county is working on to get out to everybody. So I'm proud to have brought that, you know, here to our little community. But I think there, I think there's still a process that's happening. And also, there was some confusion when we first started talking about it that we were, you know, if we fill this out, we're going to come get you.
Yeah.
And that's not the case. But so. Also, on top of that, if there's any questions from the public, I'm always inviting everybody to come by the fire station, call my cell phone, let me know. I'll answer any questions about it.
And you're going to be here on the 24th, right?
Correct.
Right.
Yep. Oh,
good. Thank you.
Yeah. Any more questions on this aspect of the report? Okay, thank you. We'll move on. Thank you very much, Chief Ricky. We'll move on to facilities and resources. This is manage and provide stewardship of district assets, parks, recreation, open space in a timely, cost-effective, and environmentally sensitive manner. Any questions, first of all, from the board members? Director Thomas.
Yeah. Thank you, President Gray. And on the present the updated community park plan to the board. I'd like to update the target completion date to first quarter. And, you know, the plan is the ad hoc committee will be presenting the draft phase three plan next Tuesday to the PROS committee. I encourage all to listen in. Following that, pending feedback from the PROS committee, the next phase will be gathering community input from all sorts of folks. And then it'll come back to the PROS committee, refined based on all of those learnings. And then it will, with that, come to the board with a good, comprehensive set of here's the community input.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? I had one question. This would be for, I think, General Manager McElhaney on rental rates. Review of rental rates. It's noted that we're working with Bartle Wells on updating the CCSD fee schedule. Is it necessary to use Bartle Wells for all of the fees, for instance, vets hall fees or rental rates, or is it simply for, I would think, larger items like?
Yeah. It's a part of the overall rate update and fee update. And I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Carmel, because I'm learning. But I believe that's a part of Prop 26, is that any fees or anything like that have to be, there's a nexus between those fees. And so I think Bartle Wells is doing that overall survey with other agencies. Did I sum that up correctly, Mr. Carmel?
You did. Studies are required to establish fees, professional studies.
Okay, thank you. My question is answered. At this point, I think if we have no further... Yeah. Vice President Scott.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. President. I already talked with our general manager about this, but I thought this was really interesting. Would you please talk a little bit more about working with 501c3 groups for fundraising? Because I thought that was a really smart thing that you're doing.
Yeah, I'd love to take all the credit, but I can't. I did have some groups. Mr. Beringer and the Lions Club had reached out to me, and they have... they have several folks in their organizations that will donate large amounts of money for specific projects. There's obviously tax break incentives for doing that. And so they did approach the district on being sort of a pass-through for some of those donations. And so what they asked for specifically was the Vets Hall. We did have an ad hoc that was looking at revenue generation for the Vets Hall, and there just didn't seem to be a lot of community support or steam behind it. And so what they reached out to us is to act as that pass-through. And so we gave them all of our CIP lists for the Vets Hall to include floors, lighting, roof, I mean, you name it. And that gave them some ideas to take back to some of their donors, and a sound system for one. And if those folks wanted to donate for that type of a write-off to the Vets Hall, they would use the Lions Club 501c3 as the pass-through to the district. And so much like the Lions Club, or if we look at Cambria Community Council, who's looked at several projects with the Pros Committee, skate park, disc golf, it's the same type of mechanism.
Yeah.
Okay. And I just need to say this because I looked at the number of updated target completion dates, and it's like 80%. Of them that are getting updated. And I think all the discussions that we've had around the strategic plan today has given us the reasons why that happens. But I just wanted to underscore that there are reasons why these dates get extended, and it's not something that people are not working on.
Absolutely. Thank you, Vice President Scott. Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, when it comes to government, and you're working with several different other allied agencies and regulators, things tend to slow down a bit. However, there are projects within the district that once we get funding and we get permitting to build, that happens really rapidly. You know, the building part seems to be the easy part. It's some of the bureaucratic red tape that you have to get through. And so just like Mr. Green articulated really well, the closer we get to the Stewart Street tank project, something regulatory happens, whether it's the foundation thickness, the moving of the tanks, triggers a CDP, triggers a categorical examination, Director Farmer. And so same thing with our effluent line. You know, at one point we were going to try and make it as easy as possible, traverse straight parks. That didn't work out. So now we're trenching up Highway 1. The minute you start trenching up Highway 1, now we have Caltrans involved. And all of those things slow projects down. And so staff is diligently working to chip away at these things. But unfortunately, these things happen in government where things start to slow down a little bit. But we're staying on top of it. You know, and I understand the community can get frustrated with these things, but there is a lot of bureaucracy when we deal with projects in the district. And it's not just dealing with district staff, it's dealing with county staff, coastal commission staff, parks, state parks, fish and game. They're all players in this, and so it takes time.
Yeah. Thank you. Any more comments, any more questions, I should say? I will open up this topic to public comment. Anyone in the attendance wish to comment on this item? Mr. Howell, go on. Couldn't if you're pointing to someone or yourself there. Okay, go on. Mr. Howell, yes.
Oh, thank you. Just a question. The fee schedule, the that Bartle Wells is working on, does that include the any new connection fees? Are we preparing for that?
We are looking at updating the new connection fees as a part of that.
The only reason I bring that up, I've been asking for 6 years for that to happen. So thanks.
President Gray beat you to the punch there.
Thank you. I think Amanda Rice beat all of us to the punch on that one. Anybody else in the hall want to talk? Anybody online?
Yes, Christina Galloway.
Ms. Galloway.
Hi. I'm becoming no stranger to delays dealing with the county and government, but I'm just wondering if it would, you know, make sense to then just assume that that's going to happen, and maybe as you move forward in planning and kind of having these target dates, you know, more closely account for these delays. That would be my only comment here.
Thank you. Any other comments online?
No.
Okay, thank you very much. Bring this back to the board for discussion. Possible motion. Before we go, I checked the items where I think we have identified the need to update the target completion dates, and I can kind of recap those for you to start, and then we can go to the discussion. On starting with the water services, general water services, at the end of the of that chart, item number, update our groundwater model. I think we, Mr. Green, I think said that should second quarter 2025 should be changed to fourth quarter 2025. And then in the next table, under the ZLD item, board approval of zero liquid discharge pilot testing program should move from the third quarter of 2024 to the fourth quarter. Down lower under the CDP application, the item of submit the data needed to complete the CDP application for the county should go from third quarter 2024 to fourth quarter 2024. Next page on the fire protection, item prepare and provide a risk reduction hazard mitigation plan for board consideration should change from third quarter 2024 to second quarter 2025. And then, yes, on the line below it is, which one? This is defensible space ordinance? We didn't get that, did we? I would say yes, actually. Should be last, yeah. It should go the same way. So those two items both should go to the second quarter 2025. Thank you. And then in the last page, second line from the bottom, as Director Thomas is noting, present updated community park plan to the Board of Directors should have a new updated target completion date of first quarter 2025. Now, did I miss anything? Okay, good. Any board discussion? Or possible motion? I'd just like to say one thing. It's in reference to one of the items, it's recreation and parks. I mean, the PROS facilities and so forth. I think it's very good news that we've got a 501c3 process going for the vets all night. I think Director Farmer and I can take some credit for that because we highlighted the issue. We brought these people, a lot of these people together, like Jim Beringer, and I think there's Greg Aitkins from Lions. So it's good to see that happening. And I think we should look at that for other areas in the general fund in particular, and this isn't for this discussion, but just for future reference, when we come back and do the big strategic plan update next winter, Parks and Recreation have the same kind of model, the public-private model. I think we should be looking to that more often, but I think it's a good thing. I'm glad to see that with the vets all too. Anyway, so I'll entertain a motion. Dr. Dean.
I move that we approve the update to the strategic plan with the amendments to the dates as listed by the board president.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the update of the strategic plan with the amendments as pointed out, as identified by the board president. Can I have a roll call, please?
Director Dean?
Aye.
Vice President Scott?
Aye.
Director Thomas?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Gray?
Aye. I'm moving on to item four.
May I?
Yes.
I would just like to thank the general manager and the staff for all the work that they have done on this update and all the good explanations that we have gotten for any of the changes. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much. I second that. I think the process is, we're refining this process every time we review it, and it gets better and better, I think, which is a good sign. On item 4B, which is discussion and consideration of approving the relocation of the San Simeon Creek Stream Gauge Station for the San Luis Obispo Flood Control and Water Conservation District. General Manager McElhaney, you can start, maybe.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. Agenda item 4P, discussion and consideration for approving the relocation of the San Simeon Creek Stream Gauge Station for the San Luis Obispo Flood Control and Water Conservation District. In summary, there was a stream gauge located along San Simeon Creek that was destroyed by some storms over the last couple years that it needed to be relocated. The county reached out to us to create a partnership on that stream gauge relocation on our property. Had some good conversations. They have some grants that are coming through. And it will put it in a better location, a little higher up, that will prevent the potential for any vandalism and things like that. There has been some incidents of vandalism with some of these stream gauge locations that have solar on them. Mm-hmm. And some individuals try to tap into that solar for power. So there's been some malfeasance with some of those stream gauge locations. So that's being relocated. And working with the county, it's beneficial to the district as well, as we can get into some of that data collection, especially when we talk about stream flows with San Simeon Creek, not only during the flood times, but in the dry season. There's a portal on the county website, and Mr. Green can touch base on it a little bit better than I can. But we can actually track, I think it's up to five-minute intervals of live data on creek and stream flow. And that'll help inform our pumping, if it was to occur, help us with the adaptive management plan, making sure we're keeping an eye on any protected species that could be affected by low stream flow. So I think it's a good opportunity for all of us. Okay. Mr. Green, did I summarize that well enough?
Thank you, General Manager McElhaney. You know, you framed it quite well. This is an agreement that we've had with the County Flood Control District since 1987. This is originally a USGS monitoring location. So there's really no impact to staff other than a couple meetings that we've had and meeting with the county when we went out there for installation. It's going to be 30 feet higher because of obviously our extreme climates that we have and our water flow that we've had. It's gone up to one of the highest high water marks in the San Simeon Creek there. So due to, like, as the General Manager McElhaney stated, the malfeasance there and it being in that flood zone, we're just going to move it on our property about 30 feet higher and put it on a big, tall, galvanized pole with some solar that nobody can get to. And the data for us is something that we look at, especially during this time of year, when we're talking about 1 cubic foot per second or less of stream flow in that creek. We use that to verify our data off of our gradient and then off of our diversion there for the San Simeon well field. So it's a key piece of basically free information to us that we utilize, especially during these seasonal flows. And I think it's just maintaining a good partnership with the county.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It might be helpful for the people watching or listening. Could you pinpoint the location of it? It's upstream from our wells, right? But how, or there's a couple of gauges I know. Where is this one located?
So if you're traveling, I guess, east on San Simeon Creek Road and you're just about ready to hit that substation for PG&E, mm-hmm. It's right to the right and kind of down off the sloughing hillside there. Mm-hmm. So it's about 800 yards away from our reinjection well number one.
Okay.
WRF. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can see why it's such a critical location for data for us.
Yeah. And there's another measurement which we hear about a lot because it's in our water license and everything, Palmer Flat, which is further up, right? And that's another measurement point.
Absolutely. So we both use those two critical data points for us for calculations during the dry season and entering into the dry season.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Any other further questions from the board? Is there any public comment from those in attendance here? Any public comment online?
No.
Question from Director Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. You know, listening into the RNI meeting on Monday, the instrument flow study, and is this, you know, they reference the county gauge number 718 in the instrument flow study. Is this the same gauge as discussed there?
Indeed.
Yeah. Thank you. Any further questions for clarification? Or bring it to the board, actually bring it back to the board for discussion and possible motion. Do I hear a motion? Dr. Thomas.
I'd be happy to move that we approve the relocation of the San Simeon Creek Stream gauge station for the Slow Flood Control and Water Conservation District.
I'll second the motion.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve the relocation of the San Simeon Creek Stream Gauge Station for the San Luis Obispo Flood Control and Water Conservation District. Could I have a roll call, please?
Director Thomas?
Aye.
Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Vice President Scott?
Aye.
President Gray?
Aye. I know there was some discussion about the spelling of gauge. Is that a spelling that's specific to this kind of usage? Or
water business.
The water business, right. Yeah. I know, exactly, yeah. Yeah. Just like there's no U in water, there's no U in gauge.
Okay. But there is a double U.
There you are. Okay, thank you, everybody, for that clarification. We'll go move on to item 4C. Discussion and consideration to approve an amendment to consultant services agreement with SWCA for assistance with the WRF CDP application and adoption of Resolution 28-2024, amending the fiscal year 2024-2025 final budget. Mr. McElhaney.
Thank you, President Gray. As mentioned, agenda item 4C is to discuss and consider to approve an amendment to the consultant service agreement with SWCA for assistance with our WRF CDP application and adopt resolution 28-2024, amending the fiscal year 2024 final budget. As you know, approximately, it's been probably almost 8 months, we initially came forward with a consultant service agreement with SWCA, who successfully helped us rewrite and consult on our project description. We, as discussed earlier in this meeting, have successfully submitted that project description along with the in-stream flow study. We do have some more work to do based on an information hold in 2020 and some of the questions that we imagine the county and the Coastal Commission will have as it applies to our coastal development permit. As a part of this budget adjustment, we are looking to update our adaptive management plan from 2017, update a subsequent EIR, CEQA guidelines, our mitigation monitoring and reporting program as required by CEQA. We have a policy consistency analysis that needs to be written that speaks back to some of the information hold that was from 2020 that has to do with some land use policies as it applies to the WRF. And so what we're looking to do is continue to work with SWCA to address all of these things that still need to occur and be completed before we have a full coastal development program submission.
Thank you. Thank you. Any questions for the general manager or staff on this from the board? Director Dean.
This isn't a big deal, but what does SWCA stand for?
I've actually looked that up, Director Dean, and it doesn't stand for anything. Unless I'm correct, I think that's just the initials of the agency itself. I've tried to look it up. Mr. Green, can you confirm?
So there's no nomenclature that stands for individually. I think it's the originators of the company. So some of the owners and CEOs, and it's just their initials.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you. I keep
there's meeting. No profound meaning behind it.
When we've had our ad hoc committee meetings that include the people from SWCA, I kept meaning to ask them, and I never did. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's something I think we actually tried to figure this out before, and it doesn't stand for any. Well, it may stand for initials, I think, as Mr. Green was saying, you know, first or last names. But it's if it was ever a spelled out name of the consultancy or the company, it never was. It can't be found. So I think it probably is SWCA, just SWCA, all caps. You know, we'll keep it at that. any other questions on this, Dr. Farmer?
Thank you, President Gray. Not necessarily questions, just a comment. Reading here with regard to just under discussion, the 2017 Michael Baker Adaptive Management Plan, and then referring down here to the emergency CDP. And I'm thinking back especially, and the subsequent EIR, and I'm just thinking about how much money was spent at that time, 7 years ago. And now we're having to update this 7 years later. I just want folks to know out there, and I'm only speaking for myself, but I think I can speak for other people here on the board and in staff, with our unbelievable amount of frustration that we feel with monies having been spent, considerable monies having been spent in the past, and we're still having to update these particular items to move forward. And so I'm just, that was my reaction, because I could be wrong with the amount, but I seem to recall that the initial EIR and the subsequent EIR were talking like $300,000, something like that. So these processes continue on, and it's, I think as was alluded to earlier, how things kind of slow down as they're moving forward. So that's my comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Farmer. Vice President Scott.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. My question to our general manager during our review was, well, we paid him $10,000. Why is it $36,000 now or $35,000? And so he did a really good job of describing why all of those other documents are going to be worked on. So thank you for that.
There is some line item description of the additional work and the change order. I think it's page 34 of the agenda, and page under the SWCA scope of work schedule and cost estimate, which just is pretty precise. I mean, it's pretty detailed that their work is divided up in a number of categories. So, and the need to update is kind of a product of delay. The longer you go between your original document and when you actually, you know, when that document is finally being looked at by the regulators, you know, if it's several years, they're going to say, well, you didn't update this, you didn't cover this, we have these questions and so forth. So it's inevitable, and delay is kind of the cause of it, just the slowness of, you know, process.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. Yeah. In staff's defense, and given the mission that was laid before us from the board, and the strategic plan was to move forward the coastal development permit for the water reclamation facility. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, as we know, through public criticism and our own criticism of ourselves and how the CCSD has handled this project, previous boards, previous leadership, we are where we are. You know, it's been, you know, 10 plus years. Mm-hmm. and moving this process forward and getting closer and closer to submitting that coastal development permit has required the updating and the spending of these monies. Yeah. However, as I mentioned before, you know, we've been extremely pleased with our coordination with SWCA and how well they've responded. They've met with our ad hoc committee. They've answered all the questions. They've been very gracious, and they've worked very hard. And I believe they're going to do a phenomenal job on addressing a lot of this scope, which goes back to a lot of the county comments on our original CDP application from 2020. Mm-hmm. And we're going to start answering those questions. And so public members have brought up that information hold and shook it in our faces and saying, you haven't answered this. And now we're saying we are going to answer that, you know. And it's kudos to our current staff, our utilities manager, our program manager, other staff that have really kept this momentum going. Although our momentum, we feel great about our momentum. The public sees it as a slow crawl, but every day we're inching and inching closer to address some of these issues. And mm-hmm. so that's why we're here today for this budget yeah. adjustment and spending this type of money, which mm-hmm. Isn't lost on us.
Yeah, thank you very much. I had just one question about these items. Brief history. There's an amendment. It's an amended item on the agenda, just so that it's clear to me and in the public. But to what extent was the item changed? I think I understand just an addition of one document within it.
Correct.
There was and just that was just to, that was just basically to make nothing changed in the money, the amount of money or the work order or anything like that. It was strictly to.
We just had a missing document, President yeah, Gray. So right. you know, the fees have not changed or anything like that. I think, and Mr. Carmel can correct mm-hmm. me if I'm wrong, but we had the original agreement, but we didn't provide the updated consultant service agreement to include the new scope and the fees associated with it. So somehow that was left out of the agenda. We caught it and did an agenda amendment on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Tuesday. Thank you. Mr. Carmel, did you want to just confirm that? If he's there.
Yeah. Yes.
And that is page 32.
I was notified on Tuesday that we didn't have the amendment in the packet. So we whipped one together and it was late, but it's there.
Okay. Good. Thank you. It's good to know. I turn this over to public comment. If there are no further questions from the board, Dr. Farmer.
Yeah, thank you. By the way, I do want to comment on SWCA because we couldn't ask for a better agency, or not agency, a better company to be working with right now with all of the all that they've provided for us so far. I think we have tremendous confidence in them as we're moving forward. I just want to ask one thing, and this is something that a member of the public commented with regard to this item, in other words, the CDP and so forth, and moving forward. Is the technical advisory committee still involved in this process at all?
Thank you, Director Farmer. We consulted the technical advisory committee on the initial reworking of our project description. We subsequently sent them the project description, and they have not communicated anything back as far as their opinions on the project description. However, we're still keeping those lines of communication open as we work with SWCA SWCA to update a lot of these things in this consultant service agreement. It's our belief that the comments that TAC has had in the past still need to be answered through the update of the AMP and through the in-stream flow study that just was published. So a lot of the persisting questions that TAC may have, even though we've reached out to them, you know, the project description doesn't necessarily answer all of the community's questions and the regulatory body's questions on the effects on the environment. It's just basically given us the scope of the project. So what we have to do is provide that in-stream flow study, which just was completed, update our adaptive management plan to address how we're going to have how we're going to mitigate any effects on our environment and any other species, CEQA, EIR. And I think a lot of those things, once this is complete, will address some of TAC's concerns, but we'll continue to reach out to them. And but we've had open dialogue with TAC and the Coastal Commission since we started reworking the project description. Lately, we just haven't had any communication with them back from our updated project description.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. No further questions from the directors. I'll turn this over to public comment. I have a speaker slip from Christine Heinrichs. Goody. Please proceed. Thank you.
Hi. Yeah. In this discussion, it's kind of raised some other questions, but I will read what I've got here and then catch up. When will the Regional Water Quality Control Board, the Army Corps of Engineers, California Department of Fish and Wildlife, United States Fish and Wildlife Service, National Marine Fisheries Service be consulted for their concurrence as is required? U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has designated the creeks as critical habitat for multiple federally threatened species, including steelhead. Cindy Cleveland's March 2022 biological report is inadequate. How can SWCA update the AMP without current data? Why were the Merck studies canceled? What's going on with that? As far as the application goes, coastal staff has no confidence that the project will ever operate, as expressed in the Bramble staff report referred to earlier. There's currently no established timeline for when CCSD might complete its CDP application, when the county might take action on it, and then when potential appeals of county decision might be made to the commission. Thus, it is not clear when or even if a facility such as is currently proposed may eventually come online, and it is not appropriate to countenance it in relation to whether such water source, if ultimately approved, could provide for new water connections to serve development in an LCP-consistent manner. This is another $36,865 paid, what was it? I think it was over $100,000 for previous biological studies. Now, apparently, we don't need any biological studies. I mean, I'm not satisfied that this is a serious effort to complete this CDP application. I'm not satisfied that this sounds like the board is really doing anything more than throwing another $36,865 into the black hole that has been the financial problem of this facility. Thank you.
Thank you. Any more public comment from those attendees? Mr. Howell.
Thank you. This is just to clarify, I was trying to figure this out. Apparently, so the original contract was 10,900 and something, but there was an overage. The question I have is the 36,865, does that include the 10,000 something, or is it in addition to the 10,000?
It is in addition.
Got it. Yep. Thank you.
In addition, yes. Anyone else wish to comment here in attendance? Anyone online?
Christina Galloway.
Ms. Galloway.
Hi. I just wanted to say I feel like this serves as a perfect example of the importance of, as a community and as a CSD, coming together to try to better streamline these expectations and dialogue with these other government agencies, you know, including the Coastal Commission. I just feel like we're working in silos, and, you know, I'm not sure the extent of the dialogue and direction that you guys get back from the Coastal Commission or the county. But once again, it just seems like another one of these scenarios where, you know, the information is being asked for, or shows up, or something else is being requested, like, you know, in overtime. On, you know, cosplayers' dime. And so I appreciate all the work that you guys are doing. I just really want to underscore how important I think it is right now, especially that we just really work together to try to improve these relationships and our just baseline understanding of each other's expectations. So I think that, you know, this showing up on today is a great example of how we could benefit from that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from online?
No.
Okay, thank you very much. I'll bring this back to the board for discussion. I had one small, I think, a correction or suggestion, not in the wording of the motion itself, but in the fiscal impact statement. It's noted that the budget, the shift in the the amendment of the budget is going to be a shift of this money from the CDP operating budget to the CDP capital project. Does that mean it's capital budget would be the term, wouldn't it? CDP capital budget. This is in the fiscal impact statement, or does it?
Yeah, I mean, I use the terminology because we have many projects within the capital budget. So I used project because it's for the CDP project.
Okay, but it's part of the CDP. This is going to be the CDP fund, right? In the budget.
It's in the WRF capital.
The WRF fund. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. So but your money is being allocated from the capital budget of the WRF for this project rather than the operating budget. That's what I was trying to get.
No, it's being from the operating budget.
From the operating budget.
Yes. Okay. So we're moving it from an operations line item to the capital project.
Okay. I don't know.
Which is within the capital fund, but to the capital project. In every other fund, we don't have a separate capital fund. We just have the capital projects within the fund. So we're taking it from an operating line item because we felt we had extra money, so we don't have to go into reserves.
Okay, so that's why I know this is unique in the WRF. You have the capital and operating funds. I just want to make sure it was clear to people that we're taking it from the operating fund to the capital fund within the WRF budget, overall budget. Okay, I think I got it. Good, thank you. That's all I had. I'll bring it back to the board for discussion. Director Farmer.
Thank you, President Gray. First, I want to thank Ms. Heinrichs for her every meeting being here to, I don't want to say hold our feet to the fire necessarily, but provide information or to request an explanation or whatever it is that she's doing that keeps us on our toes, but also is a voice for the community. During what she just spoke about, one of the things that she commented on, well, two things. First off, that the environmental biological studies that Ms. Cleveland did were inadequate. And then she mentioned that the Merck studies that we requested after that, that we paid, let's say, a considerable amount of money for as well, she said the Merck studies were canceled. So I would just like some clarification if that comment is correct or not.
No, it is not correct, Director Farmer. As creative as it is, it's not correct. We still have Mr. Work working on those biological studies. The scientist works at the scientist's pace and does what the scientist does. And we will have an update on those. Those will actually help inform our adaptive management plan. So those biological studies will be given over to SWCA and we'll incorporate those, which will help us with our adaptive management plan. But it's still a work in progress, but in no way, shape or form have they been canceled.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other comments or discussion from the board? Well, I'll entertain a motion.
Well, I'll go ahead and say that I make a motion that we approve the amendment to consultant services agreement with SWCA for assistance with the WRF CDP application and adoption of Resolution 28-2024, amending the fiscal year 2024-2025 final budget.
Thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve an amendment to consultant services agreement with SWCA for assistance with WRF CDP application and adoption of Resolution 2024, amending the fiscal year 2024-25 final budget. Roll call, please.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Thomas?
Aye.
Vice President Scott?
Aye.
President Gray?
Aye. Thank you, everybody. President Dean? Sure. Hopefully, we won't take too much longer. We'll take a 5-minute break. Yeah.
How about 2:40?
2:40 would be fine. Yeah, 6 minutes. We're ready to go. Thank you. The meeting of the CCSD Board of Directors is back in session. And we're in regular business. We're going to be taking up item 4D, which is discussion and consideration of adoption of Resolution 29-2024, amending the board and standing committee bylaws. this is the product of work from an ad hoc committee, which I think I'd like to turn this report over to after Mr. McElhaney introduces it, but I think the members of the committee might want to explain some of the background too. So Mr. McElhaney first.
Thank you, President Gray. Agenda item 4D, discussion and consideration of adoption of resolution 29-2024, amending the board and standing committee bylaws. On May 9th, the board of directors filled a vacant seat on the Parks, Rec, and Open Space Committee and expressed confusion regarding whether one of the committee members could fill a seat on two different committees. And there's been some other conversations about chairs being non-voting members versus voting members. And so that ad hoc committee was formed to address some of those questions. And it is my understanding they've done a pretty good job on that and are ready to report.
Okay, thank you. And the committee was Vice President Scott and Director Dean, right? Do you want to say something about it? Good. Vice President Scott. Oh,
thank you, Mr. President. So what we did in essence was just clarify things. We didn't really change anything, except the main thing was make the chairperson a non-voting member. And that was the overall thing, is there was some confusion about whether or not that person, number one, could be a voting member, and number two, be part of an ad hoc as far as the committee is concerned. So very slight changes, and I think unless there are any questions, that's all we really need to say.
Director Dean?
And also, we amended the board bylaws to reflect that the chairperson is a non-voting member. We had some confusion about whether if the chairperson had the ability to vote, how does that affect what a quorum of the committee was, and that would take to conduct business and vote. So we just worked together to try to clarify all of that.
And my understanding is that the there were no more three-member ad hoc subcommittees anymore because
because three members would be a quorum.
Yeah, and to clarify the change in the chairperson status, it was only to be a tie-breaking vote anyway.
Yes, right?
Because it wasn't going to be just an additional vote.
Right.
And I don't believe I've been chairing committees for several years now, and that situation has never come up.
Right.
So I think it's probably something we're not don't have to have there. I had one question for clarification, and this gets back to the rule about not being on multiple committees. Mm-hmm. This is on page 49. Sentence added to section 2.2. No committee member shall serve on more than one committee at a time, which is very straightforward. However, what happens? Does that also apply to chairs? In other words, a board member. Can a board member chair more than one committee? That might come up since we have four committees and five board members, and there may be a case where, you know, we might have trouble actually finding a board member who's both qualified and willing to serve on a committee, and that person may be, I'm not speaking of anybody in particular, that person may be appropriate as a leader for more than one committee. And it's, to me, I don't know how that, if this applies to that, or if it should be clarified to either apply to it or to not apply to that situation.
I don't think this speaks to that.
It doesn't. No. We're talking about appointed members.
Right.
Is it worthwhile putting a appointed committee member or something like that, just to be absolutely clear?
And that would belong to the board bylaws, don't you think?
Well, I don't think there's anything in the board bylaws on that topic, is there?
No.
Mr. Carmel, yeah. I think this is the only place it appears, and so.
Well,
yeah.
This section 2.2 is referring to the actual
community committee members,
the directors. No. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that we really need to address whether a board member can chair more than one committee. I don't see a circumstance where that would happen, because if we did have someone that we suggested serve as a chair and they didn't want to do it, I mean, there's five committee members. Mm-hmm. I mean, chair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Directors.
Directors.
I'm saying, I'm just saying, I want to make sure that there's clarity on this, this applies, just in case.
Yeah.
And to the point I made a moment ago, standing in the board bylaws, standing committee, the Article 9.1 is the area that would be discussed. Discussed. That is where, in the board bylaws, the discussion of the appointment of directors as the committee chairs.
I would rather not box the board into having to do something outside of the bylaws or within the bylaws as far as chairs. I think that we have to be flexible.
Yeah. I think if it's just we could tell a note for the record that based on our discussion here, the that section 2.2 applies only to the community members, our committee members that were appointed.
As it says, because the director is not a committee member.
No. Yeah. Okay.
So that's quite clear.
That's the sense of the board. That's good.
Good issue to bring up.
Yeah. Anybody? Oh, Director Thomas.
Sure. Thank you, President Gray. So on pages 50 and 51, at the bottom of page 50, so the director, the committee chair, supervises, provides guidance, et cetera. Now, how does that connect to the ad hoc committees? And you know, I'd like to confirm, I would assume that includes discussions where the ad hoc committee has questions outside of the regular meeting. A member, I assume that means that a member of an ad hoc committee would contact the chair for procedural questions and such for advice and guidance.
One member.
Right, one and only one member. And that would be fair game, correct?
Yep.
Yep.
And also on page 51, I believe you're very intentional where you say appropriate ad hoc committees of no more than two committee members. So you're leaving you are leaving it open that the chair could appoint an ad hoc committee member of one person. I have seen in standing committees where the chair appoints someone and that someone says, yeah, and I'd just like to take this on myself. I don't need any help or no one else volunteers. So it is fair game to appoint one or two members of the committee to an ad hoc, correct?
I would say it's fair game, but I would say that two is better than one.
Obviously, obviously, but within bounds.
Yeah.
Because we're essentially ruling out three, that's out of bounds. So one is in bounds, two is in bounds. Understand what's good and what's better. But
I would assume that if one person's doing a job, they're not really an ad hoc committee. It's a person that's accepted an assignment to do something. I would think it would be more than one member that would constitute an ad hoc committee because you're working together and coming to a consensus on what your research did, and maybe Mr. Carmel can.
Mr. Carmel.
Well, I don't think a committee of one is a committee. It's an individual that's doing an assignment.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to say. Thank you.
Thank you.
So perhaps a rewording, because as worded, one would say there must be reasons for saying no more than. And by definition means one or two.
The reason is because we don't want three.
I think, yeah.
We don't want more than two because two would be a quorum.
There's an easy way to say that.
That's what it
and
says.
And simply say an ad hoc committee of two members. You could strike out the words, if the intent is that you want two and only two, we get it that you don't want three. And what you're saying is you don't want one, so that makes it very simple. You might strike out the of no more than and say of two committee members.
I think that's common sense if we can just do that, because a committee is more than one and it's less than three, so it's going to be two. So go ahead.
Except what it says is appoint appropriate ad hoc committees, and so one would not be a committee. So I don't have any problem getting rid of no more than no.
Yeah, kind of goes without saying.
Yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah, Dr. Scott, do you have any more?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Yeah, I had another suggestion, and this is for clarity in this section. It's easy. You talk about ad hoc committees on a committee. This is pretty clear because you have the capital C committee for the big committee, the main committee, and then you talk about ad hoc committee meetings. I do like the term subcommittee, though, as a very clear term. You don't like it. Do we think we understand that an ad hoc committee is a committee of a committee?
Yeah. Well, who knows Latin because it's Latin? Mr. Carmel.
Do the thing.
And before we go to there, I would object to the subcommittee. The ad hoc committee in the Brown Act is very clear that that term is used, and it's very clear that an ad hoc committee cannot have an ongoing forever role.
Right.
It's got a specific scope and it comes to an end. Subcommittees, however, can have ongoing roles, and that would be a substantive shift in the philosophy of what these two-person groups would be doing, and that would, I think, get us into outside the bounds.
You know, the comment.
What does ad hoc mean?
To the thing.
Did you want to know what ad hoc meant?
Well, it means it's for a particular purpose.
That's right.
Yeah, for a particular purpose. Yeah. Anyway, any other? Dr. Scott, your light is on.
Sorry, I was just.
I want to. If we're done with questions or a clarification, I'd like to turn this over to public comment. Anyone in attendance wish to, Mr. Howell?
Well, first of all, I think the changes are excellent. There's a history of the way these committees have developed, and each change has been to increase the involvement of the public. It started with two board members and then members of the public, and then that got reduced because that's too much board in one place. So the idea of having members of the public free to express themselves and give them as much power is the wrong word, as much influence as possible. And this is the next step, and I think it's an excellent one. I had a couple of questions regarding implementation, and then if the committee chair, who is the board director, doesn't vote, but and this maybe is a question for Mr. Carmel, was it your intention that that committee chair also not be able to make motions? So that's a question that I think we might want to address. And then the other thing, it just has to do with the schedule of the implementation. The way that I read the bylaws, once you make this change, there's nothing to prevent that from going into effect immediately. So that was a question, is that your intention? The other thing, just harking back to your discussion about changing the general meeting schedule and where the board goes to one meeting a month, I don't recall in that discussion if there was any specific implementation date, but I assume, based upon my memory, that it was your intention that that start with the new year. So that may, just as a point out, you are probably going to have to introduce another change in the bylaws in order to implement that change at the appropriate moment. So I just wanted to raise that issue. Thank you. You answered my question.
Good point. I will have something to say about that.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty soon. Any other comment from those in attendance? Any comment online?
Yes, Gordon Heinrichs.
Mr. Heinrichs, please proceed. Hello, Mr. Heinrichs? Ms. Dodson, are we getting his signal?
Here it is.
Oh, here we go.
Got to push the button. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now, yes.
Sorry about that. I appreciate the comments that are being made in this category, because those are a lot of confusion areas that did come up in the policy committee a few times about the chairman being able to vote and have influence as a quorum. The question I still have is clarification on if the member of the committee wants to form an ad hoc with a non-committee member, as in the public. My understanding was that was acceptable. I was wondering how that would address this choice.
Thank you. Response to that, Scott, yes.
Yes. That community member would not be part of the ad hoc, but that committee member or that community member could be a resource for the ad hoc.
Exactly. It wouldn't be a voting member of an ad hoc, but you could certainly meet with the person or maybe a number of people
sure.
on the outside as just to get input on the subject matter that you're addressing. Anybody? No.
So we need to clarify Mr. Howell's questions on whether the chair can make a motion, since the chair does not vote. And my opinion is these committees are an opportunity for community members for their input. And I think the chair can ask if they would like to make a motion, especially if it's a discussion and consideration item, but I don't think it's appropriate for the chair to make the motion.
Mm-hmm. I think common sense says that. I don't know if it needs to be spelled out. There may be something deep in Robert's rules that, I mean, Mr. Howell would know, but it seems like it's common sense in a way that if you can't vote, you can't make a motion.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So I think we can stay silent on that, as assumed. Yeah. Okay. Good. And any other questions? I guess I could turn this over now to discussion and a motion, because I think we're ready. Dr. Dean?
I move we adopt Resolution 29-2024, amending the Board and Standing Committee bylaws with that one change as brought up. I'm trying to find the page.
Oh, it's
on page 51,
yeah.
Where we eliminated the words of no more than from 3.4D.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, 3.4D.
Have a second?
Second.
Okay, so we moved and seconded that the Board bylaws are amended. As shown in Exhibit A, go to the first page. Adoption of Resolution 29-2024, amending the Board and Standing Committee bylaws with the one amendment from the proposed bylaws as seen in Section 3.4D under Committee Officers, eliminating the words no more than from that sentence. Could I have a roll call, please?
Director Dean?
Aye.
Vice President Scott?
Aye.
Director Thomas?
Aye.
Director Farmer?
Aye.
President Gray?
Aye. Now, it's assumed, I think, since there's no date at which this takes effect, it takes effect now. And I don't think there's anything that has to change in terms of membership or anything like that. The one thing I wanted to say that, I'm trying to Mr. Howell's question about the other stuff that needs to be done to the bylaws, given our change in schedules proposed, and maybe some other related things. Since, for instance, the length of the meeting would obviously be revised, or if you have that rule at all. So I'm as chair, I'm sort of, I guess you could say, I'm reappointing this ad hoc committee. If they like to take on those further topics, which I think are now pretty much fixed, I think we are going to be starting. We haven't obviously, the proposal has not been voted on by the board, but the proposal, and will be on a future agenda, obviously, is to go to one meeting a month, and having, which is the key change that has to happen, and also having standing committee meetings on two days of the week, right after the board meeting. So that's the idea that's going to be presented to the board. And obviously the board bylaws, we'll have to change, and I have to look at the committee bylaws, and may have to too, because they have dates, right? I think they do. Yeah. I don't. I didn't think they did either, but definitely the board bylaws will change. So this, if you're fine with that, you're tasked with carrying this work on.
Sure.
Good, thank you. Okay, I'll move on to the last item of regular business, which is 4E. And by the way, good work. Good work to both of you. Nice, clean. Very, very, you know, not very clean, and you hit all the points that had to be hit without making things messy or fussy or confusing. It's good. It's agenda item 4E, which is discussion and consideration to approve a landowner access agreement with Upper Salinas Los Tablas Resource Conservation District regarding access to and use of real property to implement a habitat restoration project for the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. I'll turn this over to Mr. McElhaney for an introduction.
Thank you, President Gray. As mentioned, agenda item 4D is discussion and consideration to approve a landowner access agreement with Upper Salinas Los Tablas Resource Conservation District regarding access to and use of real property to implement a habitat restoration project for the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. The Fiscalini Ranch Preserve and the Upper Los Tablas Resource Conservation District reached out to the CCSD to gain permission to go onto the property and start some of this habitat restoration. There is a grant between the California Association of Resource Conservation and the Los Tablas Resource Conservation District. And so those grant funds have been worked out between them, and they would like, basically, this is just an agreement for them to come on our property and to perform the project. Mm-hmm. We do have Miss Haley, forgive me if I mispronounce your name, Lurick, who is here to answer any questions, as well as, I believe, Mrs. Conley is online as well.
Okay, thank you. So any questions from the board members for either our general manager or for the people involved in the project? Dr. Thomas.
Yeah, thank you, President Gray. And this is great. And one question I have immediately, and the question I've heard from many others is habitat restoration. What do you mean habitat restoration? And so I would ask Ms. Lurick and Ms. Conley to explain the nature of the understory habitat restoration that they're describing.
Yeah, that'd be very good if we could. Are you up in, you have a screen? Have them up on the screen?
Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes, we all thank you. There you are. Thank you.
Sweet. Yes. Thanks. Thanks for having me today. Yeah, we're really excited to hopefully work with you guys and get some habitat restoration implemented out there. We have a contract set up with the Santa Barbara Botanical Garden to install poyon, sticky monkey flower, coyote brush, coffee berry, and some ryegrass out there. And it's in an area that was previously planted. So there's some pine trees out there, but we're trying to just put some more understory species in and just kind of make it a little better for wildlife. And it'll also hopefully increase the aesthetics for visitors to the area.
Yeah. Could you define the area of the ranch? Because I was looking at the documentation. It looks like there's a lot of acreage is alongside Highway 1. Is that true?
It's not along Highway 1. I think Kitty has her hand raised, and she may have a better description of where it is.
Yeah. Hi. Ms. Connolly?
Hi. Hi. Thanks for having us. This would be among the trees that have been planted over the past, say, 3 years that are between the Ridge Trail and the Forest Loop Trail.
Okay.
So they're near the Dalton Bench.
Okay.
And they're all species that were chosen because they support pollinators. This is a grant to support pollinator habitat, but we've been planting lots of trees, but not really a forest because we just plant the trees. It's more of a plantation. Mm-hmm.
Got it. Thank you. Any questions? Director Farmer.
Yes, thank you. And thank you, ladies, for your explanation so far. So in this document, on page 56, under number 4, restoration and maintenance, where it says, including eradication of non-native plants, collection of seeds or cuttings, and plantings of appropriate native species. So that's really the only indication of what work is going to take place. Now, obviously, you've elaborated on that. So perhaps there's somewhere in this particular document that we have here, the landowner agreement, where we can where we can install some more detailed description is what you've just provided with regard to where the planning is going to take, where the work is going to take place, and the fact that it's, you know, various plantings that have already occurred that we're going to be paying attention to. Does what I just said make any sense?
Yeah, it sounds like maybe we could amend that contract just to give some more detail as to what the project will look like. Is that kind of what you're asking for?
I believe so. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can do that.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. By the way, I found it interesting that, and I don't know if anybody else took the time to look back, so some of these land surveys, I guess you would call it, and the oldest one I could find was June 3rd, 1867, and then there's another from April in 1873. I just found that, like, really intriguing. And then there's other dates, you know. So there we are. So thank you so much.
I have a question.
Yeah. Vice President Scott.
Thank you, Mr. President. So I don't see – it's an agreement. It's not a contract. So and all we're doing is giving access, but I would like to see – an addendum to your to your agreement that was more specific. So rather than have it be like an addition to a contract, but then probably needs to come back, this would just be an addendum to your statement about what it is that you're going to do. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess the question becomes, yeah, I asked Tim, Mr. Carmel,
yeah,
would this have to come back for separate action if we wanted an addendum of some kind, just to expand on one of the sections here already?
If you're not formally amending the agreement, then that can go forward today, which was an excellent idea to keep this moving, and just to attach a description after the meeting and not necessarily bring it back.
If it pleases the board, what we can do is we can work with Haley and Mrs. Conley. And what we'll do is if the board chooses, we can move forward this agreement for land use, yeah, so to speak. And then we can, on our website, once we get the appropriate information, put a little blast out on exactly what's happening, mm-hmm, what's being, yeah, planted, the scope of the project. And if we can get that scope of the project, we'll make sure that that's accessible,
yeah,
on the website.
Yeah, I get a sense that we haven't taken a vote yet, but I sense the consensus that we don't want to hold up the agreement, let them use the land, just because we want some further information about what they're doing, because we're, you know, there's no problem with what they're doing. We just want to get more information out there. I think, you know, we'll have public comment and on this and everything, and I'll come back. But I think we can, it sounds like we can approve this as is.
Can I just say, yeah, one more thing? Is that okay with you, Director Farmer?
Yes, certainly is. And also, not only would we like to have a little bit more detail on exactly what is going to take place, but it would be nice as well. I know that Ms. Conley kind of described the area where this is going to,
right,
happen, but it'd be, yep, nice if we had an updated map,
right,
that would provide more information as well.
I was going to ask this to my question too, like, where is this? Yeah. Anyway, before we go on, I want to open this up to public comment. We have a speaker slip from Christine Heinrichs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. Yes, those are exactly the questions that I have. There's literally no information in the agenda about what is involved in this project, where it's going to be, and rubber stamping a 10-year access without more information. It just doesn't seem like a good idea. So thank you, Kitty Connolly. Thank you, Resource Conservation District, and thank you, Santa Barbara Botanical Garden. It sounds like a wonderful project.
Thank you. Anybody online want to speak?
No.
Okay, thank you very much. Director Dean.
Maybe in this description that's going to be attached is, I'd like to see pictures of the plants that they're planting. You mentioned four different species. Mm-hmm. I don't know what sticky monkey flower looks like, you know, but
they're out there though.
I know. I'm just, I think they're yellow, but
sometimes they're orange too.
Okay, yeah. But I just think if there's going to be more detailed description of what exactly is going to be done, the community needs to be able to go out there and see, oh, this is the plant they said they were going to plant.
Thank you, Director Dean. We're emailing them as we speak.
You're good.
To set up that information.
Yeah. I guess with public comment over, I'll bring this back to the board for discussion and a motion.
I'll make a motion if everybody's okay with that, but I just want to say how unbelievably fortunate, once again, how unbelievably fortunate we are to have the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, because like about 32 years ago, some folks wanted to build like 420 houses there. And there was good, well, this community would not be the same if that had happened. So two thumbs up for the fact that it didn't happen. And we have this blessing of this 400 acres plus to enjoy and be closer to nature and creation with. So thank you so much. And with that, can I make a motion?
Certainly.
Thank you. So with the additional amendments that we described here, I make a motion that we approve the landowner access agreement with Upper Salinas, Las Tablas Resource Conservation District regarding access to and use of real property to implement a habitat restoration project for the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve.
Can I make a friendly amendment
right.
to that?
Yeah.
As worded, Director Farmer said, with the amendments we've discussed here.
I wouldn't use that terminology.
And in my opinion, we're not making any amendments to this. We're simply asking for an addendum that's reported back at a later time. But since we've got an organization doing us a favor, working closely with FFRP, who is intent on maintaining the conservation easement and the look and feel of our preserve. Together, they know what belongs in the understory. So I would ask that we remove the word amendment.
I would use this phrasing more like this. Move to approve the agreement and direct staff to prepare a description of the project with in consultation, obviously, with the project managers to inform the public about the nature of the location and nature of the work or something like that. And directing staff in addition to approving the agreement. If that's okay, maker of the motion.
Yes, whatever you two gentlemen said, add that to what I said and if we'll go from there.
Okay, is there a second?
I would second that.
Okay, great. It's been moved and seconded.
And I want to thank Director Thomas, since he said he wanted to make a friendly comment. Friendly. So thank you for being friendly.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded that we approve a landowner access agreement with Upper Salinas Las Tablas Resource Conservation District regarding access to and use of real property to implement a habitat restoration project for the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, and that staff is directed to prepare a description of the nature of the project and its location. Roll call, please.
Director Farmer?
Yeah, I wish I had said what President Gray did. Aye.
Director Thomas?
Aye.
Director Dean?
Aye.
Vice President Scott?
Aye.
President Gray?
Aye. We'll move on to our last item, which is, next last item, which is the committee and liaison reports. As is our usual custom, these are all written down, so we're not going to go down through them one by one. I want to first of all ask anybody who has submitted a report if they have anything to add to theirs, and then if anybody has any question of other committee members, of other directors about the reports.
I guess it's
Director Thomas.
I guess it's the water bottle, isn't it?
Yeah. Director Thomas. I'm sorry, Director Thomas.
Straight line. Just want to point out there is no PROS committee report. July 29th, I canceled the August 20th PROS committee regular meeting, and as I indicated, likely of interest, the meeting next Tuesday will be discussing the the phase three community park plan.
I would add the there's no finance committee report because likewise I canceled the August 27th finance committee meeting. Okay, is there any public comment on this item? Oh, again. Dr. Thomas again, yes.
Yeah, you know, thank you. I just felt you know, important to comment as I read through the reports on the Resources and Infrastructure Committee report when I noticed the proposal for potentially a well to be drilled on the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve. It was like not just red flags, but it was like flares going off. And I just wanted to comment. I think there's awareness that would be you know, not in keeping with the conservation easement. Yeah.
Director Dean, yeah.
Yes, Ms. Connolly graciously attended the meeting and let us know that with the conservation easement, that is not going to happen, and we agree. And I would like to ask, does anybody think my R&I report is too long or too detailed?
That's fine. Yeah. Very complete. It's very complete.
I like to make it so people feel like they've been there, and I just hope I'm not overdoing it.
Great context.
Fine. Yeah.
Thank you. But while we're at it, I've canceled the October 7th meeting and moved it up to September 30th as a special meeting because there are a few things that our utility manager wants to get before us before it comes before the board.
Okay, thank you. Again, is there any public comment? Any public comment online?
No.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on, I guess we're, unless there's further further discussion, we'll go to the future agenda items. And this being, I think, the first meeting of the month. Oh, Dr. Farmer, sorry.
Yes, I have a future agenda item.
Oh, okay, good. You can do that first. I was going to say, I want to see if we have Ms. Dodson recap the agenda items are already on the schedule. Then we'll get to the suggestions.
Sure. The proposed October board meeting items are discussion and consideration regarding creating a policy for streetlights and lights at other district facilities under CCSD's jurisdiction, receive a presentation from Stillwater Sciences and file the completed in-stream flow study, consideration of approval of the CCSD's climate adaptation policy, and discussion and consideration of approval of the zero liquid discharge pilot testing program with Global Water Innovations.
Okay. Thank you. Dr. Farmer.
Thank you, President Gray. I want to go back to public comment at the beginning of the meeting from Ms. Younger. I believe this has been discussed before with regard to right now our policy is written comments are just put at the district website, but not read aloud at the meetings. I believe this came up before. Director Thomas and I kind of had a discussion about the fact that we felt that it would be proper if somehow, if people, for whatever reason, just send in a written comment as opposed to speaking, either Zoom or in person. I feel that a written comment, you know, indicates that somebody really went to the trouble of making a statement, and we as a board, I believe, or we as a district, kind of have an obligation to allow that message to be heard at a board meeting, just like a Zoom or a public comment at the dais would be. That's my personal opinion, so I'd like it to, I'd like us to discuss that as an agenda item.
I you know, agree that it would be very appropriate to discuss that in an open and public session, the pros and cons of that approach.
Thank you.
Well, I take it under consideration that we did have a discussion about this at an earlier meeting. I mean, my view is that the you know, and other people who are chairs who will be president will have their own ways of doing things. I think to me, it's a prerogative of the chair. I think the argument against having the letters read is that I think it doesn't allow or doesn't, you know, enable people to speak in their own voice. It can be quite awkward if the person reading the article is the subject of the letter, of the comment. And it does create some issues with letters that are perhaps go over time and so forth. I mean, my view as chair, current chair, is that it should be a chair's responsibility. And I mean, your prerogative. There'll be a new president coming in who might do things differently, which is fine. But I think it helps reinforce the power of the chair, the ability of the chair to run the meeting in a way that is suitable in that person's view. Now, if you disagree, I don't think this is a matter that rises to the level of a board policy or a bylaw, which is what a vote would kind of be.
I concur. It doesn't need a policy, but if there's a third director that's interested in it being discussed at an open and public meeting, I think it would serve the community well for the community to hear our discussion on that approach.
What we're doing now, of course, is a little bit out of line because we're discussing it. So take it under consideration. Unless there is the option of having it voted on now to put on the agenda. You have that right. Make a motion to get a majority.
Well, I would move that I ask the future agenda item to discuss how we handle the written comments at the board meetings in the future.
Have a second?
Yeah, I'll second that.
Okay. Roll call.
Director Thomas.
Aye.
Director Farmer.
Aye.
Director Dean. Can you turn on your mic?
We can discuss it, yes. Okay, never mind.
Vice President Scott?
My opinion is that it is the prerogative of the president, so I'm going to vote no.
President Gray?
Likewise, I'll vote no for that same reason. But it will be on the agenda.
Yeah.
3-2.
And President Gray, one more agenda item that will be coming last minute for next week. Mm-hmm. I met with Mr. John Lynn.
I'm glad you were saying this because good news.
It is good news. Yeah. It was scary at first, but good news now. There is a physician in the community that reached out to Mr. Lynn post our agreement for the lease and wants to open a office clinic and take advantage of that x-ray room that's already built, and we don't have one in Cambria, which would be a very, very valuable to our community. So they reached out to us to discuss options, which initially made staff pretty nervous because obviously we came to the board, we got approval, we talked about cost savings, and graciously Mr. Lynn has agreed to amend that lease, move us to the west side, which has a slightly different layout. Still three offices. It'll still be roughly the same square footage that we have access to. However, it's a much larger office. So theoretically, we could violate our square footage and walk south and go into the other open office areas. But that is still going to be up for lease if anybody wants that. And if they were to lease that other parts of that office, we would create a false wall and wall that off to isolate the CCSD. But the layout is better for us. He agreed to no changes in the cost of the lease. Everything will remain the same. We're just going to be heading to the other offices, which will open up an office for a physician. And that is coming to you. The agenda will post tonight, but we were able to rework that lease, and I'll come back before the board. Pictures, Mr. Lynn will be here, we'll do it all over again, but essentially nothing's really changed in the lease except for we're walking across the hall about 50 feet.
The amount of money is the same.
Yeah.
Thank you for bringing that up.
And there won't be an office that doesn't have a window?
And there will not be an office that does not have a window.
And there won't be a lead-lined office either.
I was going to say, you won't get exposed to lead.
No exposure to lead, full Wi-Fi, full cellular service, and I will have access to the community, and they will have access to me. I won't have any excuses to say I don't have a signal.
And there will be an x-ray facility.
And there will be, and if that works out with the new physician and they work out that agreement, there will be an x-ray facility and a doctor's office in that same building. So it's a win for the community, and I can't express our gratitude to Mr. Lynn for working with us, because I was going to tell him no, because I can't come to the board and spend a lot more money for a larger space. But yeah, he worked with us. It's been great. So
good to hear. Any lights on? Any more future agenda items? I think seeing none, I hereby adjourn this meeting.